Hello and welcome to And Other Duties, the life of the assistant conductor, with me, your host, Karen Leverin. This is a podcast highlighting the lives of conductors from all over the world, telling their stories of what it is assistant conductors really do. Not only that, but these are guests and people who I've personally collaborated and connected with, whom I admire, whom I turn to and whom I share this crazy, thrilling, exhilarating journey with. Without these connections, our brilliantly bizarre profession would feel far too lonely. Having worked as an assistant for over 6 years, from Ireland to the UK and then the USA, I want to help spread the incredible stories of those of us who are normally behind the scenes. A huge thank you to IT Passion for supporting this series of And Other Duties. This week's guest is the current assistant conductor at the Grand Rapids Symphony Michigan. He held the position of staff conductor at Cleveland Institute of Music. He has acted as cover conductor for the Buffalo Philharmonic and the Cleveland Youth Orchestra and has assisted Marcelo Leniger, Joanne Folletta, Carlos Kalmar and Vinay Paramaswaran. Originally from China, he is now based in the US with both a fine conducting and violin career. I met this conductor as we were both finalists for the position at Grand Rapids Symphony. This conductor's elegance and poise, as well as humour on the podium, was nothing short of graceful. Duo Shen, it is my absolute pleasure to welcome you to And Other Duties, the life of the assistant conductor.
Thank you so much, Karen. Thank you so much for having me here.
It really is a pleasure. We met in Grand Rapids May this year. So not that long ago, but already a great connection, which is just wonderful.
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about your music journey so far.
Well, I started as a violinist, violin student when I was 5-6 years old, and I just keep playing by myself with having private lessons and joining the school's youth symphony. Never thought I was going to become a professional musician, actually, until my junior year, a professor at University of Delaware heard me playing and he invited me to the United States. That's where I started my actual professional musical journey. And then one thing lead to another, I went to University of Maryland for my DMA in violin. Never thought I was going to become a conductor. And then somehow I got into the Cleveland Institute of Music program without finishing my DMA yet.
Okay.
And I thought I was not going to be able to finish either of the program. Somehow I finished both. and I never thought I was going to become a conductor after that point even, because it's so competitive in our field. And somehow I got a job. And,
and here you are. And I just want to make it clear to people, you finished both of those in the same year, didn't you?
Yes, I don't recommend it, but don't underestimate it,
because you say didn't believe I could finish it, but I want to tell everybody it was a marathon. You did it 2 in 1.
Yep, at different school, 6.5 hour drive apart.
Wow, and obviously two different things, violin and conducting, connected, but also two very different skill sets that need an awful lot of attention.
Yeah, both. So during that time, actually, I truly felt alive, because I have to stay alive to do both.
Yeah.
And I actually, for a long time, I haven't been practicing that hard, to tell my teacher, that I actually practice until 12, until midnight, until the school kick us out. Because it's just that kind of motivation of I want to finish both. I want to try to see if I can do that. Once I decided that, and then I scheduled myself a lot of rehearsals back in Maryland, so I have to drive back, and then I don't want to waste my time and everybody else's time. So a lot of hard working, but that's truly the good time for me. So at that time, I really felt connected to music.
I know we've had a similar journey in the States. You've obviously been there for far longer than I was there. But I want to talk a little bit about that, because we had a great conversation about it when we were both in Grand Rapids. We were both in a similar time, visa problem, worrying about the next step of what we were going to do. We shared many drinks. We won't say whether they were alcoholic or otherwise, but we shared many drinks. Just talking about it, because it's really hard, and you came quite early to the States.
Yeah, I came to the States in 2008. I know nothing. I just finished my high school, and I came to stay, and my English was okay. But the moment I arrive, I ask a question at the airport, and where can I go to Terminal B or something like that.
Yeah.
And this person just said, blah. I was like, excuse me, can you say that slowly one more time? So he just pointed for me. That's the first culture shock I had.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's different things for you, different reasons for you. Of course, language is not really an issue for you, but there are other, there are just different way of people seeing things and talk about things. It just
but you were also so young, Duo. Like, I mean, I had been in and out of the States for many years before I decided to move there. So yeah, there were some cultural things, and obviously state to state is so different. They're like different countries. It's comparable to Europe almost. But for you, you were so young.
I was relatively young, compared to now, I was very, very young. and the first shock I had, it was the temperature. People keep telling me, oh, it's 70 degrees. I said, what? Are we that hot? But yeah, it took me a long time to get used to, okay, 70 degrees is the comfortable temperature.
Oh, I never converted. Yeah. I always had to check my phone. I'm so lazy.
It takes a while. It takes a long time for me to. I still sometimes use, Celsius, but Fahrenheit is more and more used to me now.
And what was it like in terms of, so I'm assuming you went on a student visa and then, you completed undergrad and then went straight to master's. So your student visa just extended all through that period?
The policy changed, I think.
Okay.
During my first time in 2008, I have to renew my visa every year.
Whoa.
If I want to leave
and
the country.
And did you have to go back to China?
I went back to China because I miss home very, very badly. Mm. So I give up. Actually, now I regret it tremendously. I didn't go to Aspen. I got into Aspen my first year here. But I just miss home so much. So I decided I want to go home.
Yeah.
And then when I went back home, I have to get new visa. Yeah. That changed probably after I got into my DMA program.
Okay.
That's when we can get...
Because
different country, we get 5 years.
Great.
For visa, so I don't need to constantly going back to China and worry I don't have enough time to get my visa back.
Yeah.
So that's a great improvement actually for my life.
And I'm not sure, everybody knows this, and we have listeners obviously across the globe, but for the Europeans, I really want to highlight it that it is such a struggle to get it, and the student visa is the easiest one to get. And when you get the student visa, you can't work for your first year. And then when you can work, you can only work in your major. So for me, it was conducting. Yeah. And I mean, how many conducting jobs are out there when you're a student? I actually landed on my feet and I got one, thank God. But it was hard financially. It was really tough, even though I know both of us had huge help scholarship wise, because that's another thing nobody tells you about. You can't get financial assistance in America. So for me, I was on a full scholarship at Kent State University, and then I was their graduate assistant. So they paid me to be there. The payment only covered my lodging, but it was enough. And I was older, so I had enough savings. How was that for you?
It was very challenging, of course, and amazingly, you have you land a job after you arrive. That's incredible. That
I was
never
very
happens.
Lucky. Yeah.
Well, I learned this. You're blessed because you work hard and you deserve the job. So it's not luck, but it's definitely a blessing to have that. The reason I can afford to come to the United States for undergrad is I was extremely blessed that my professor offered me a full ride.
Yes, that's a
with
big
room and board.
Yeah, full ride.
Yeah,
exactly.
Full ride with room and board.
Yeah.
Which means I don't need to pay anything and the school pay me.
That's fantastic.
For living and eating.
Yeah.
Which is extremely rare for undergrad.
Yeah, it really is.
Probably never happens anymore. But there's our other program probably have like a full ride, which you don't have to pay tuition.
Yes,
but you still have to somehow figure out the living and food and stuff
like
that.
Yeah,
And insurance is so expensive.
Insurance is so expensive. And, you know, you've all these little extra hidden costs and trying to sort out your social security. And for anybody that might be thinking of going this route, you know, there are means and ways around it. As Joe said, undergrad is really unlikely that they'll give you a full scholarship, especially the bigger schools. But look into the smaller ones and look out for what are called graduate assistant positions or teaching assistant positions, because you become part of the faculty and the staff. And for me, that was invaluable at Kent State. And although we didn't know each other at the time and it was different times, you weren't so far away in Cleveland.
No.
You were right up the road.
Our live paths probably several times
in Seventh Hall or something.
Probably we probably see each other. We might meet each other eventually. But that was quite incredible. Even for assistantship position, you know, not many school has them anymore.
No,
it just with all the funding cuts and stuff. And if we can land a graduate assistantship where it covers the tuition, well, pays you for a certain amount, and then sometimes school pay for health insurance and other things. That's incredible.
And also
I mean, the experience for sure, it's something very, very special to be able to consider a staff member of a university. It's very rare.
And for you, you finished at CIM and then went to be a staff member. You were actually paid then for a year or two, right?
For a semester, actually. I was very unique. I had a very unique position because during that time, COVID happened. So we all did have that, but COVID happened, and my first teacher at CIM, Maestro Toplo, Carl Toplo, he retired, and they haven't find his replacement yet.
Okay.
So I was there, and then they hired Vinay Paramashwaran, who's the associate conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra, wonderful friend and great teacher. But he's only there capacity as a faculty.
Right.
And yes, they invite him for guest conducting, but also they give me a lot of opportunity for that.
Yeah.
For conducting. And after that, I just think I did okay job.
Yeah.
And they think, we'll give you a little bit more. And especially after my last semester, which is the fall semester, and then during the spring semester, we don't have any students there, and the teacher were just Carlos Comar, Maestro Carlos Comar, who's the new teacher, who just got there, and so there's some concerts with prep school, and also there's some preparation of the guest conductors.
Yes.
They just said, if you want to do it, I was like,
give it to me.
So I was put into that very unique position.
And not to be underestimated, because I know for both of us, it led to other things. I had a similar position at Kent, and then I went on to hold a university position in North Carolina. And you had this, which led you to be able to apply for fantastic things. And even if you're preparing for somebody or, you know, just doing small things, meeting those people, it's really invaluable. And I know Carlos has just signed the contract and started at North Carolina Symphony and is already doing wonderful things. And Vinay is looking for music director positions everywhere. There's so much to learn from these people.
Yeah, absolutely. I met one of the most important friend and mentor, probably Joanne Folletta. Through CIM. And she's just wonderful.
She really is.
And I must brag, she gave me a baton case
because
I prepared for her orchestra. And it's right there on my table. It's an incredible thing to create connection with those wonderful teachers, and they really want to help you if they can.
And I think I had a connection with Joanne as well. It's with you and I, when we talked, we just had all these connections and same things, but we had never met. It was funny, but I shared a concert and covered with Joanne January of this year. And I really wasn't sure where I was going and what I was doing. You know, in my second year at the symphony, I was thinking I want to move on to something. And she was just the biggest, best sounding board, and what a wonderful human, and continues to be. You know, you send, and I know you know this, you send an email and she bounces it back, and she's one of the busiest people in the world, and yet she is there for you. And just never underestimate the small gestures of kindness that you do for them, that they will then return to you, because we need it.
Yeah, we need sort of encouragement.
Yeah.
You know, in our line of career, there's I always have doubts. I still have doubts.
Yeah, every day.
Like, whether I should do this. Yeah. Every day when I wake up, it's like, what am I doing? during my darkest time, I was saved by friends and Joanne, because I was ready to quit. You can only take rejection letters so many.
That's so many true. Times
until you start doubting yourself. And especially out of school. You know, you just finished your school, you have dreams, I have goals, I want to do this, I want to do that, I apply for this, and bam, 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 rejection. We are going to look at different direction. We have a very high level pool of candidates, and we decided not to, you know, those kind of things. I memorize those things now. You can only take that so many times until you think, okay.
Totally.
Maybe this is not right. They're right. You know, maybe I should start considering backup plan.
Yeah,
this might not work. Yeah, especially for, like we said, international student, we don't have time.
It's a ticking time bomb. You're sitting looking at your visa. And I know with Joanne, she said the same. She took me aside and, you know, what's next? And of course I'm applying for basically anything that was on the internet I was applying for at the time. And she said, similar to your story, she was like, you be prepared, you're going to be rejected, but you're going to land a job. You will, and you're going to forge a path. And it was just hearing her believe in me. I just remember being in tears, thinking, okay, I can do this, and okay, and that rejection is okay, and to see where she is at in her career. And but Du and I were both a similar age, and we're still young conductors, I'd like to point out. However, there are younger conductors, you know, in their early 20s that are there. And so sometimes I find age does play a factor. You've got this cutoff of 35 for jobs, competitions, and actually playing is such a huge important part of conducting, that if you haven't done what you've done or had all those experiences, sometimes it's lacking. Sometimes you are a brilliant 22-year-old, but age can play a factor, and it's really hard. So meeting older conductors again, it's just warms my heart and gives me hope every time.
And I think the way you start this podcast is great, because I wish you could start as much earlier. It will help me so much to hear other people's, you know, the paths they go through, because we can only see the path from successful conductors.
Totally.
And they seems like have such a, I can't say easy way, but they're you know, start conducting some major orchestra when they were 26 years old, become music director 27, and just become, you know, that. Now I think about Yannick. I don't remember when did he become the music director of Philadelphia. Probably 30 something, my age, probably.
But you know, even earlier for Montreal, you know.
Right, that's right. You know,
crazy.
And then think about Dudamel, you know, Dudamel, and all those people. I'm more mature. I know, you know, everybody have their own past, but when I first started, you know, those are the people we look up to, and we think that should be the path.
It's so
true. The only way of doing it.
Yeah, and your birthday passes by and you think, well, what have I achieved by then? I was certainly like that, definitely until I hit about 30. I think once I hit 30, then I kind of, okay, I'm okay with myself. But you look all around you and you can't help but be jealous. And I have another good friend that I text regularly about these things, and he said, I'm so jealous, but more importantly, I'm so proud. And so that honesty is so important. It's okay to feel jealous.
Yes, I was just thinking about this before the podcast. Like, I have I'm at the age where my friends are getting jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends, Sunny Xiao, who just got the Seattle.
Exactly.
Seattle System Conductor job. And I know people who teach at university now.
Yeah.
I have friends who, you know, all over the place. And I'm so proud of them. I'm so happy for them. In the meantime, for some reason, I feel sad for myself. You know, it's like, oh, they got this great job. They got this Schulte Foundation Support Award, and they got premiere here. They got their debut here. They are doing amazing work, and I see them actively changing the musical world, which is what we will talk about.
Yeah.
But meantime, it's like, what about me? You know,
I think that's natural.
Always have that feeling.
You know, we always are improving. The beauty is what we don't know. That's what my teacher Jung Ho Kim said at Kent State. He said, "You'll always succeed if you know what you don't know." And in knowing what we don't know, it makes us a little bit jealous because we see other people, but we forget then what we're doing ourselves. And every journey is so unique, which is exactly why I started this, to show it and to highlight it, because there isn't a path, and that's okay. And every step that you take, whether it's forward or backwards, that's also okay.
I agree. Like, I now can tell myself why I'm doing this, right? I'm doing this because I enjoy doing this. It's not because this is going to make me so much money or something.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not a musician doing this, right? Because we're passionate about this. We're passionate about community. We're passionate about changing the world the way we think it should go to.
Yeah.
And so I don't do jealousy that much anymore.
Yes.
Because I'm getting older and I'm happy with who I am.
Mm.
But whenever that creeps in, I just have to remind myself, like, what we're doing right now, like, what you're doing right now, like, this is amazing thing you're doing. And we should enjoy the moment instead of wasting energy.
Exactly.
Thinking, well, what if I'm doing that?
Like, or the other.
We are doing great things here.
Exactly.
So I'm more and more in control of my emotion in a way. Make it healthier.
Just a quick note to thank IT Passion for all of their support throughout this project and for sponsoring this series of And Other Duties, The Life of the Assistant Conductor. IT Passion support businesses across Ireland and Europe with all their IT needs and solutions, allowing them to run their businesses efficiently and effectively. They're a huge supporter of local businesses and the music industry in Ireland. Thank you again to IT Passion for partnering with me on this season. You can find out more by visiting their website, itpassion.com, and on my social media. Duo, I want to talk about the most incredible, I don't really know how to put it into words, but the experience, I think you know what I'm going to say.
Yep.
That marathon, series of marathons. There's a thing in Ireland called a Hell and Back, and you it's like a race through mud, and you know, the best wins kind of thing. I feel like that's what we went through in a roundabout way at Grand Rapids Symphony Michigan. It was honestly one of the most thrilling, fulfilling stories. Weeks of my life, I think.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? Like, when we apply for jobs, we talk to other people who already get jobs and ask them about the process. Normally, you know, they'll tell me, oh, it's this morning, and then if you get the second round, it's that for no, and then bye-bye, you know.
Yeah.
And when I would love you to share your side of story, because here's mine. You know, I apply for whatever online.
Yeah.
And then however I can get it, of course, I prepare them, but I already have in the back of my mind said, be prepared, it's going to be a no.
Yeah.
And then I got an email from Aaron and said, I would like to call you. And that's a good sign, right? So I received that call, and Aaron said, I would like to invite you to our final, and please book this week. And I was like, okay, so they haven't decided which day they want to do it, right?
Same.
So,
he said, are you free that week?
Right?
And I was like, yeah, I have nothing on. Like, which day do you want me? No, the whole week. I was like, oh, sure.
Okay. You probably haven't decided which day you want to do this, and it's fine, totally fine. I'm happy just be invited, you know, that kind of mentality. I'll block it. And then they sent us the schedule. I was like, wait a minute.
The repertoire first.
Every day?
Let's just say the repertoire came first before the schedule. Don't forget that.
Oh, that's right. The repertoire came in first. I was like, So many music. What is happening?
I actually want to tell people what it was, because it was insane in the best possible way.
Please.
And you'll have to jump in if I forget. It was all of Shostakovich Symphony No. 1, all of Beethoven 5, all of Mendelssohn Scottish, Mozart Horn Concerto No. 3, I think. Mozart Rondo in C for violin. First tableau of Petrushka.
Yeah.
And then
there's musicals.
Yes, and a Tchaikovsky 4, the first movement or 6.
Oh, first movement, Tchaikovsky 4.
For youth orchestra. And then the 4 finalists have been given 4 pieces of musicals. So I got Chicago. I think you got The Sound of Music. It was about 5-6 minutes long, and we had to chop it down to 2.5-3, I think.
And 2 minutes, within 2 minutes.
And then we had a singer.
Yeah.
And there were no lyrics in the arrangement, but we had to meet the singer, and the singer was going to do it, and we'd one rehearsal to put it together. And out of all that rep, we didn't know if and or all would we be conducting.
Yeah. They said, please prepare everything,
yep,
and then we'll let you know what you're going to conduct on the day.
Yeah, on the day, or the night before. But
yeah. Literally the night before, right?
And I was first. Do you remember?
Yeah. I remember that. We're like, we can't make her first everything.
I was for absolutely everything. It was, we stood around a table. I'll let you get back to the week, but this part for the repertoire, the 4 finalists stood around a table with 4 pieces of paper shuffled, and we grabbed one each and lifted it up. And yeah, I was first for everything that day, and the interviews. Yeah. And, but anyway, back to you.
Yeah, it's just so it's just, I'm like, whole week. I'd never heard of it before. It's so thorough. What nervous me the most is a 1.5-hour interview with the committee.
Yeah. A committee of 8 or 9, by the way.
Nine member committee. And we have to meet them. And then we have another interview with the production team.
Yeah.
Right. And then we have another meet and greet with the incoming chairperson, and then
the outgoing
chairperson, and that was quite intense in my first impression.
It was amazing. We had this first day, which was a workshop with the music director Marcelo Leniger, which was just incredible, because it was like being invited to a masterclass. But of course, we didn't know till the night before what we got, and that was on Beethoven and Shostakovich and Petrushka, one after the other. And so that was a masterclass. He got to see what we were like. We got to meet the orchestra on day one. The night before, we met the chorus and the chorus director Pearl, and we sat in with them. And then after the masterclass on Tuesday, on Wednesday, we had our own rehearsal with the orchestra, which was going to be performed live in concert the next day without the music director. I think he was sitting there, but we got to do it ourselves and meet the soloist for the first time, because we hadn't met either the violin or horn soloist, and we had to run that. And that was all surrounded by these meetings. So we had, a 9 panel interview for 1.5 hours, as Duo said, and then production interview, which I think was about the same, about 9 people for half an hour.
Half an hour.
And then another
same day,
exactly. And then the next day we had a concert, and not only that, but we tag teamed. So we all conducted a movement of the symphony. We all conducted a movement of the concerto or the rondo in C. And then we all did the pops piece, and we all had to speak before the symphony. We had to do a 2-minute. It was just incredible. It was the most, I actually felt now retrospectively, it was like my graduation from grad school that I never had because of COVID. And I feel like I did 2 years of grad school, 2 years as assistant somewhere else. And I personally needed it to feel like I could do it. For whatever reason, I had won the position at Winston-Salem, but it hadn't been as intense as that at all. And so I feel like I had to go through that to believe I could do it. It was therapeutic almost.
Yes, absolutely therapeutic. I love your way of saying it's like graduation. It does feel like graduation. 4 of us just finished somewhat a program together.
Exactly.
And then we have presented a final product of that. And then we talk to the audience member, and they're so warm and welcoming, which is wonderful. I really did enjoy that, because I heard some other auditions, they would ask you to speak to an empty hall.
Oh, God.
And that just not going to be pleasant, I feel like.
No, it was really lovely.
Try, yeah. Yeah, it was lovely. And I remember you guys all land jokes and I hear the laugh. And it's just, I remember Aaron also sing a little
bit. That's right.
I was like, that's not fair.
But it gave us an opportunity to know the community too. And I think that was really important, that a lot of the times, and I have found this as of recent, I've moved back to Ireland and really so happy to just be back in Europe. And it's something I've craved for a long time, but sort of, I guess, hidden from myself because I thought, no, you know, stay in the States. There's so much work there. Get back when you can, work when you can. So you end up moving from place to place to place because you have to. That's where the work is and that's where your visa is and you just go with it. And sometimes it's not a good fit. Grand Rapids was amazing. I personally would have happily moved there. It was so warm and welcoming. But what they allowed us to do was see what life would be like there. And I really appreciated that, from the staff to living there to working with the orchestra to, you know, amazing food. I remember the most beautiful wine and cheese bar.
Do you remember they even have a realtor drive us around
that's
the city?
That's right. That's right. To show us, you know, if you were going to live here, this is where you would. They really, it was the most thoughtful process. And you have traveled an awful lot this summer, meeting loads of different people and conductors, which inspired me to really start this podcast. But they were bowled over by the production that went on for that week and the expense of it all. And it was really incredible.
It really made me feel like they appreciate us.
Yeah.
You know, they appreciate they understand what we are going through, and they really appreciate what we can offer, and they want to see us as human being, not just a sort of a tool that can help them achieve certain goals, but they want us to be artistic leader in a way, and they want to see if we can rise to the occasion. And I really do believe all four of us really show them who we truly are, and they love all of us.
Yeah, sure, it was a really hard. I know they said that it was a hard decision, and bravo for you know, I don't want to use the word winning because it kind of makes a competition out of it, but bravo for winning because I can't think of anything else right now. But what a beautiful relationship it created, because when we eventually got the news and we were texting and you were saying, I'm so sorry I couldn't say anything. And then we had also applied for other jobs and you had said, I didn't get this, did you get that? And I know Constanza, one of the other conductors who was a finalist, we have shared so many texts about different things saying, I'm applying for this, are you, don't forget this, I got my rejection, did you? Because at the end of the day, we need that. If we don't have that and we don't have that knowledge, we're lost.
Yeah, I that's why I love this idea of supporting you, because we are sort of, we have to support each other. Yep. This is a very challenging career, and conducting is addictive.
Yeah.
It's very addictive. It's in a way of creating sort of atmosphere and working with people. It's nothing. I personally think nothing is better than this.
Yeah.
But it's so challenging, and a lot of things are in dark. It's a lot of our traditions of what to apply. I've seen my friends who got to great opportunities I never heard of.
Yes, exactly.
Until they get that job.
Yeah.
Right. Like my friend got into a Berlin Phil's some fellowship finalist who select to become assistant for Berlin Phil. I've never heard of that.
Wow. It's closed because of agencies and, you know, we need to help each other with those things because some of it is hard work. A lot of it is hard work. I'm not going to lie. And I know you're an incredibly hard worker as well. And you need to be in this profession. But another portion of it is luck and being in the right place in the right time. And then I think the third ingredient, although there are so many, but another big ingredient is the relationship. And that was definitely something that Aaron Doty and I spoke about in our phone call afterwards. He was like, you know, it was such a hard decision. We went this way, we could have gone another way. And it's almost like dating, you know, which one am I going to go on a date with for this week? It has to work and it can go anyway. And that's also okay.
Yeah, it's okay. That's why I now understand why my teacher telling me just keep applying for things.
Yeah.
And also, I realized I can't fake myself. I have to be myself, because you are going to be leaving this community.
Yeah.
And they're going to find out who you are eventually.
Yeah.
Why not just show them who you are? And if they don't really particularly interested in the trade I'm offering,
yeah,
maybe that's just not a good fit.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
just be, and when you apply for enough things and you work really hard, eventually someone will think, oh, okay, this is what we're looking for.
Yeah, it'll click.
And that will be a perfect match. And that will make the life so much easier and happier.
Yes.
Than trying so hard to get into certain things. And then once I got it, you'll feel I don't belong, or yeah, you know, those kind of feelings start creeping in. Oh, this doesn't work out the way I was hoping for, or something,
yes,
like that.
So, yeah, no, it's so important. It really is.
I feel like the mentality is very important.
Yeah. And Grand Rapids also offered us an opportunity to watch two of their Pops shows. We also sat and we conducted the youth orchestra. It was the final thing we did, and got to meet those amazing kids and saw their concert the day before. We really did everything. So I guess all of us left there knowing what the job was, what it would entail, what it was going to be like. I must preface this with, and you'll have to give me the exact amount of years, but the previous assistant then turned associate conductor had been there for how many years?
Around 30 years.
Unheard of. I think it was 34 potentially. I could be totally wrong, but it was in the 30s. Totally unheard of. And just incredible. So a new position all round.
Yeah, it's a new position for never come up for 30 years. Yeah, it's a very rare. John Vernon, who's the previous associate conductor, who's a legend here. Like everywhere I go, they're like, oh, you're taking John's job.
Ooh, la.
It's a legend. It's like, yeah, it's okay. I have some more feet. I always fit in big shoes. It's okay. I'll handle it. It's okay. But the things he does, because he's been here for such a long period of time. Yeah, his entire career is pretty much here, that he see the development of the organization, and he does a lot of things that I just didn't realize that he was doing, like the whole program notes for the whole season.
Wow.
He wrote all of them.
Wow.
He's still writing them.
Phew, I was going to ask, did you inherit that?
Yeah, he's still writing them. I'm tempting to pretend I don't speak English to avoid that. I'm just going to try to tell him that it's my second language. Yeah. It's incredible things he does. And the knowledge that he has with the organization, just invaluable. I still talk to him about things.
That's
like,
lovely.
What do you do here? What do you normally do here? And he's so supportive.
And that's what we need, you know, talking about support. Duo, you went into this, and as I just said, we had a really good picture of what the week was like. But what were your expectations, and then what was the reality?
Because of this thorough audition process, we already know the level of orchestra, both Youth Symphony and the amazing Grand Rapids Symphony. So there's no shock for me.
Yeah.
I was expecting to do, you know, the assistant conducting job. My understanding was just covering the rehearsals, giving balance feedback, and lead the Youth Symphony, and occasionally conduct a pop concert or community concert. That was my expectation coming in. And then the first 2 weeks, I'm telling you, we had one meeting just for me. The whole production team, everyone sitting there, and then they lay out the everything I need to conduct, just dates. Dates after dates, and then they say, okay, here you go. Tell us what you want to do.
Wow.
So I get to program all those. And that first 2 weeks was quite intense, because I've never programmed so many concerts in one setting before, to be honest with you. And some of them are holiday concerts, some of them are family concerts, some of them are access to music, which also showcase symphony, but also helping, you know, autism kids.
Yes,
and those are the audience members that have to be very mindful of the dynamic contrast and stuff like that. And so what I did was just ask for help.
Yeah, help.
You know, ask librarian, ask our production team to please help me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because also when we do outreach concert, we're in different hall every time.
Okay.
Sometimes we'll be outside, and then there's sometimes the stage will be really small. Mm-hmm. And we can't, I can't do Wagner, you know. So I got a lot of help for them. That's just the reality I had. It's just programming for the first 2 weeks. And after that, it's after the season starts, it gets easier.
Okay.
Because, you know, we have a pattern to follow.
Yes.
Study this and study that. That's what we do as a, in school as well as, you know, in other capacity as a system conductor. That's the primary things we, people see us do.
Yes.
We post on Facebook, right?
Yeah,
right? We
yeah.
post Facebook.
Study.
With the stand, with music, and then the orchestra, the rehearsal. Yeah. That's what we, that's also my Facebook feed now.
Yes, study. One thing that really struck me and what I loved about Grand Rapids Symphony was when we walked into the office and I asked one of the production team, you know, where would our office be if we were here? And they said, no, we know you have to study. So there are office spaces here that you can use if you're coming in, and if you're meeting the production mm-hmm. team, you can use the boardroom or downstairs in the library, but you need to study. And I almost cried because they understood it. It was like, finally, an organization that understands that this is exactly what we need to be doing. And the assistant positions are so important for that, because you've talked about programming, which I want to come back to, but as well as programming and conducting for your own things and what you have to prepare yourself, be it for the Youth Symphony or the outreach and all of those community engagements, a huge part, which we don't often get to conduct, are the subscription concerts, but we do have to mm-hmm. cover them. But that's how we learn our rep. If we don't mm-hmm. learn the rep well enough when we're covering, we can't take notes, we can't give feedback, but also it doesn't, that this is the crucial time as an assistant to learn the rep. Because when you go and you go into the freelance world, you don't have the time. You're going from one thing to the next.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and also, you know, it depends on the conductor. Marcelo is incredibly talented conductor, musician, but also he also, I don't know, he's very humble as well. He asks for help. He would want to meet me after every rehearsal and
that's
talk about balance. And
So
I have to really study score.
Yeah.
He almost have a photographic memory. In
the wow. way
that he memorized the piece so well. He studied. If you look at his score, I saw his score just all the markings with sticky notes, and here and there he has his own dynamic changes.
Wow.
He has freezing, and it was incredible what he read his score. So with that kind of artistic leader, you have to study, you know.
Well, and it's good because sometimes we assist conductors that don't even look at you. I've had that experience a couple of times with guest assistants that come in. I mean, I remember one in particular didn't ask me anything for the whole week except could I hear the timpani. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I learned all of this. Come on, like ask me something.
Exactly.
You don't even know the hall. Mm-hmm. But when you have, and I have had that in my previous, I was assisting Tim Redmond at Winston-Salem Symphony. Even the break of rehearsal, he was like, how did that sound? Was it better? And you immediately feel part of the team. Having that mentor relationship, it's invaluable.
It's absolutely amazing to be involved.
Yeah.
Like, be involved in the part of the performance, because we are part of the performance.
We are, yeah.
But if the conductor don't ask any questions, it just feel really lonely sitting out there.
Really,
what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Wasting everybody's time and money here.
And the thing
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Drew. I'm an awful habit for cutting across people. This podcast is called And Other Duties, and we'll get to that in a second. But sometimes the and other duty is jump in because the conductor is sick. And if they haven't included you in the production until then, what do you do? And also, I don't know if you found this, but in previous jobs, the musicians ask us the questions, not the conductors, because they don't want to ask the conductors. So they'll find you before, hey, duo, check out the score. What do you think of da 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 da?
Yeah, they did that. I remember we just did also Sprach.
Amazing.
And then, you know, and then the contrabassoon players afterwards, Andrew would come after me and then said, am I actually with the organ? Because where I'm sitting, I'm hearing the bounce back sound, I feel like I'm just ahead of the organ. Mm. So, no, you're fine. Yeah. You know, they would ask those questions because they want to do good work.
Yes.
You know, they do want to do good job. And sometimes they find you. And then it's just a simple question. Is this a right note or this is a wrong
note? Exactly.
If you didn't know, yeah. I mean, everything is a test.
Everything is
sort of a test in a way that people will know if you prepare or not. And those musicians, professional musicians, they are coming prepared.
Totally.
They know the piece. So if the conductor is not prepared, you lose their attention, you lose their respect.
Yeah.
So fast.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's so hard to get it back.
Totally.
So we just have to work really, really hard.
We do. And the study is a part of that, and the conducting is another part of it. And obviously, as conductors, we think, or we may think, that conducting is a huge part of it. But the jokey bit of this and other duties is a joke and not so much a joke, because I want to highlight what those other duties are that we do. And you've spoken so well about so many of them, programming being one of them, and obviously different expectations versus reality. What are the and other duties for you?
I feel the assistant conducting job. Now I've been doing this for the symphony, for Grand Rapids Symphony, for a couple of months. I view the assistant conductor as the assistant to the organization.
Yes. Yeah.
We're not only assisting to about music, but we have other duties. You know, I talk to audience member a lot, especially during outreach concert, because that's when you connect with them. I promote our other future concerts during my outreach concerts.
Yes.
So we can bring audience to the hall. We have program movements on the screen while the orchestra performing. So I will be in the booth changing movements.
Yes.
Especially for those pieces that's not quite clear how the movement goes.
And by movements, you mean camera angles?
No, not cameras, but just we have a screen and it shows, for example, Osersbrock, they have 8.
Oh, I see what you mean, the themes. Actual movements. Yeah, yes, gotcha.
Actual movements.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we did a concert last week with the pianist. It's a new series, it's called Pianists, which is very interesting because the pianist will do a solo piece in the first and then 2 concerti.
Right.
So it's almost like a piano recital.
Okay.
And she asked for lightings, different cues. So dim the lights, complete dark, bright, those kind of things. And it's all matched the score. So I will be the one who in the booth calling all those cues.
Yes. Yeah.
I will have an opportunity to do a pre-concert lecture.
Great.
In November. Other things also includes a lot of, you know, I'm one of the judge for a Santa parade marching band competition.
Cool.
Representing Grand Rapids Symphony. Yes. So whatever the orchestra need.
Yeah, you do.
They think we do it, you know, and you know, it's just for the better production outcome we should.
So true. And I know the week that we were there, we had the brilliant Michael T. Ness, who was showing us around so much of it. And he has a different role in the organization. But the small touches that he did that I believe that the assistant conductors do for conductors at times were just incredible. Things like cookies in our dressing room and food when we needed it and making sure that everything was there. And then let's go here. Let me show you this. And have you had the experience to have to do any sort of things like that for Marcelo in terms of getting things ready for him?
Not right now. I think I was very lucky because the organization is large enough to have a specific production manager who would do those things, getting Marcelo the water and things like that. So I haven't need to do that part yet. I'm happy to if they need me.
But I think that's the key. Yeah. You're happy to, because if you, you know, that forges a bond when you have to jump in and do those things. And you're so, I know when I was there with you, we were all helping each other with different things. Like, can we get each other this or a Band-Aid or whatever? Are you hungry? Or, hey, I found this at this store. It's those tiny connections that mean so much.
I remember the most beautiful thing I've remember from our audition week is when I turn around and you guys will look at me and give me balanced feedback. That was just the most incredible thing ever. Like, you not only pay attention, but also you know exactly what I'm looking for. I would just turn around and I see you thumb up or like, maybe things like that. It was just so wonderful that small things that you connect with conductors.
I actually have chills as you're saying that, because I remember the last part of the masterclass, which I was, to say I was nervous was an understatement. It was Petrushka. Do you remember?
Right.
And it was the first tableau of Petrushka. And I was first, and I'd never conducted it before. I was sweating. I remember just thinking, You did so well.
You never conducted before?
Never conducted before. And the reason I'm saying it is because I came down off the podium and you were like, that was awesome. And I was just so emotional because I knew it was honest. It wasn't, that was great, well done, with like no feeling and fake and all that. It was just so genuine. And there was a real sense of community that week. And I lost
years of my life
preparing that piece duo.
I mean, you did so well. I still can't believe you've never done it before.
Never. I've done it.
I've done it before in workshops, so I knew the difficulty of that and stuff like that. But that was incredible.
I still don't believe you. But those small things make such a difference, and they really connect people. Whether it's musicians on the stage that might need water or a cushion or a band-aid or the conductor, and something that I'm always saying is, you know, you almost need to have eyes in the back of your head to see everything. And I'm sure you feel that way too, just observing, especially in this new role, observing everything.
Yeah. You just have to be like a caretaker for the orchestra. Like wherever they need, you know, if the stage crew needs a hand to help carry, if the union allows, I would help. You have to be sort of sensitive to this, but of course you have to respect other people's job. That's what they do.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, if they can help, yes. If someone's pushing the piano and it's pretty heavy and they couldn't do it by themselves, of course I'll go there help because I have nothing else to do at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, just jump in whenever you can, because that mentality really helps the organization and people will love that. They really do appreciate it.
You know, we learn too. And I want to jump back to that. There's so much that I really want to talk to you and time is ticking, but the and other duties, you know, we've talked about programming, which I want to bring in. We've talked about you sitting in the box and managing that and lights and potentially saying we're going to do this take from tonight or use this piece, but I want to use that piece from tomorrow. And the union and talking to the board and the board of directors and fundraising. I know a lot of it we learn on the job, but is there anything in your life that helped you be prepared for that? I know your performance might have had played a part in it.
I think, you know, for fundraising specifically, they have development team to do the actual raising.
Yeah.
What they need us is to be a human being, to be a musician.
Yes.
Yeah. And to connect with people. Mm-hmm. And I think that for us, all of us conductors, if you want to do this, this is the part of us who want to share this experience with other people. And that's just natural. I think just be ourselves. If you're earnest, be earnest. If you're funny, be funny. if you both, do both. You know, be passionate, be nerdy. You know, the thing I learned is the donors or the audience, they love it.
Yes. Yeah.
They will eat it up because they want to have that personal connection with the musicians. And we don't have to ask for things.
Yeah.
They have other team for that. So I think just in general, when we at school or when we had opportunity, first of all, really encourage ourselves. I know we introverted, we all say ourselves introverted, but try to train ourselves to talk to people, to share our passion, try to inspire others.
Yes.
And that really became a trademark or a really good thing for us to have for the future. Assistant conductor, yes, but of course, eventually we want to become music director, and that is an incredibly important tool for us to have to be able to inspire people and talk to people.
It really is, and something else, I've been talking to a lot of young conductors recently, and so many of them are so, like, they want to study now, which is great, you know, study, but they want to do all of it. I am a really firm believer in slow and steady wins the race. And I think that you're on this page as well. Playing was such a huge part of your development and continues to be, and has shaped you to be the musician you are. I have had jobs from, you know, high school teaching to music directing, lots of different things, to ending up in the States. And here I am now, worked with special needs children and with the elderly for a time. I just have the most crazy career path that I wouldn't change for the world. What are your thoughts on the slow and steady? And I know you mentioned you're now comfortable in yourself and you know where you're at. Do you feel like now, you know, mid-30s, taking this position, you're able to take so much more of it on because you do know who you are?
I love this question because it really does resonate with me, because, yeah, I still feel like, yeah, mid-30, yeah, what, you know, we're still young.
Sorry,
and feel like we're a sponge, right? Yeah. We want to absorb as much as we can, and we can.
We can.
We really can. And we have to trust ourselves. We can be whoever we want, truly. If we try really hard, if we work really hard, I completely agree. It's just the mind decide what we can do, and we should open our mind and to accept all those possibilities. And we, in Chinese, we say 技不压身, which means you can never learn enough skills. Mm-hmm. So, you know, calling stuff, calling lighting cues, designing camera cues and stuff, those things will come back and become useful eventually, I believe.
I believe too.
So I don't think there's limits, and I don't think there's limits in age. I don't think there's limits in how we learn. And as long as we keep doing music, keep playing, I think.
To me, age has always only been a number, from my friendships to my colleagues, that, you know, it really doesn't bother me whether I'm sitting with an 18-year-old or an 80-year-old. I enjoy everybody's company, and that's always been who I am. I have the widest range of friends that I just adore, and colleagues as well. And I want to make sure that this resonates with people, because I know there are people out there our age, younger and older, who are in this field still applying, and that's okay. And to say again what we've said earlier, which is, you know, someone somewhere will like what you do and it will click, and that is okay, and it will be the right fit. And I feel like Grand Rapids is the perfect fit for you. It feels like you're really flourishing there.
I'm very, very happy where I am, and very happy who I am. So I think that's a very good situation right now I have. Yeah, I'm very blessed and lucky. Yeah.
And you hinted at this in the previous comment, and it's almost too early to say, so I don't want to push you too much. You've just started at Grand Rapids, but what would be the aspirations for you? I don't really believe in the 5-year plan personally. It's sort of, you know, go where life takes you and have a plan. I don't know whether the 5-year one is applicable, but what would you like to continue doing, either project wise with yourself or your growth through Grand Rapids?
You know, I've learned not to make plan because it never works out.
I love it.
Five-year plan, 2-year plan, 1-month plan. I'm going to go to shopping tomorrow. It never works out. So, but I do have a few aspirations that I really want to achieve for myself and also for the community. I really think I want to continue to develop the Youth Symphony here. Of course, it's very... As you already met them, they're great kids.
They really are. And so talented.
They're wonderful.
Full youth orchestra.
I love the way you work with clarinets. I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous how you help them.
Those of you that might not know, I was a clarinet player, so I got to help the clarinets of the Grand Rapids Symphony in the audition.
Oh, yeah. I was just so jealous. I was like, oh, I wish I could do that. But anyways.
Same for violin and me.
Yeah, well, we'll help each other.
Exactly. That's what it's about.
We'll help each other. Yeah. So that's one of the things I really wanted to do. And also I want to just connect with the community, hoping the Grand Rapids expand this community to more people, to get more people. Because you work with them, they're a great orchestra.
They're really very sensitive. Yeah.
Very supportive, well, wonderful musicians. And we
and
really
an amazing
want more
artistic community, full stop.
Yes.
I mean, it's busting from the opera to ballet to Grand Rapids Symphonies. And Grand Rapids Symphony plays for all of that, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they collaborate with all of them, yes. So it's a wonderful place, community. I just want to help them continue to develop that. And for myself, of course, eventually, maybe some years later, if I can become the artistic leader, I want to be and maybe help some community to develop their art program, help with the education program there as well. I see now I work with youth symphonies. I see the need of help in the public education system here for music, especially. And if there's something we could do to help them, that would be
so important, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, because that's the root of our classical music.
Yeah.
Nobody listening to classical music when they were young. It takes us a much longer time to help them come to the symphony hall.
Yeah, and it's so rewarding working with kids because they give so much back. I mean, I shouldn't use kids because some of them are late teens, early 20s, but it's incredible
still
working
to us,
with them. Yeah, still kids to us, exactly.
Yeah.
But
their
smiles even, or sometimes when they say, oh, I get that, you really feel like you've done your job.
Yeah, because it's just a different way working with a professional musician and the kids, right? With kids, everything's a surprise. Everything's new. Everything's fresh. And you just have to somehow help them discover those ideas.
Yeah.
For professional musicians, it's about, you know, how we achieve this really perfection or this excitement, how we make them more exciting because this is their third time, fifth time playing the same piece for a week. So it's a different mentality and it's both rewarding in their own way. But yes, definitely working with kids is refreshing. And
it really
it's
is.
Always reminded at least reminded me why I want to do music. It's to inspiring and building this connection with people.
And Duo, what's coming up this year for you? What are you excited about?
Well, I mean, This year I have a few holiday concerts in November, which we're gonna do a lot of, you know, Christmas music. I'm finally gonna conduct some of the Nutcrackers, which I've never done before. I'm so excited about it. In December we're gonna have Sunny Patty, who's a Christian singer, coming visit in December, sing loads of Christmas music.
Love it.
It was gonna be very exciting. Yeah, so. There are many excitements going on, and with the youth symphony, we're doing Sibelius I.
Ooh, la la, bravo!
Yeah. it's a very challenging piece, but we're getting there.
Good.
So in November, we're gonna
Hope I can hear a little bit of it, or maybe some of it will be streamed.
I'm not sure if it will be streamed, but we'll talk.
Yeah,
we'll talk.
That'd be great. Thanks.
I'll get you something. Yeah, because the second movement, in middle of the rehearsal, I asked one of the kids conduct so I can hear the balance. They sound very good.
Oh, amazing!
Especially, so great. That moment reminded me why I want to do music. Oh, you know, those are the beautiful moments. Yeah, yeah.
Duo, I could sit and talk to you all day. We had the most amazing week in Grand Rapids, and I know that we'll definitely connect after this and lots more. There's one final question I have for you, which is, what would be your parting piece of advice? I mean, we've talked about so many different and other duties, but what is your advice for and other duties?
From what I've been doing and what I learned, I think the most important mind I have is keep an open mind, you know, be willing to do things that is music related, but also not music related things, because it helps the organization, we should be able to somewhat learn how to do it. And there's no better way of doing it than actually doing it.
Yeah.
So if the organization asks you to try to help them out with different ways, just say yes. And even if you've never done it before, just say, help me, I'll learn. But yeah. Really keep an open-minded is such a crucial part of our career. Especially nowadays.
I love it.
So I would say that would be my advice if I can't give any.
You totally can. Jump in and just do it. It's been absolutely wonderful. Please give my love to everybody at Grand Rapids. I'm sure they're listening. And hello if you are listening. And thank you for looking after Duo and for giving us a brilliant week together along with the other two finalists as well. Duo, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on and Other Duties, the life of the assistant conductor. And as always, if anybody has any questions, please reach out to either of us. We'd be happy to talk to you, to answer your questions. Join our community or create your own. That's what it is all about. So thank you, Duo.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you.
Take care and love to Michigan.
Many love to you. Thank you.
Throughout this series, I want to highlight businesses doing amazing things in the music industry in Ireland. Festival & Van is one of those. COVID forced us all to think outside the box in terms of concert venues, but it also made us realise how important music is in our lives, whether we play it, whether we're conducting, or just experiencing it. Born out of COVID, Festival & Van did just that, and since then, their passion for music has taken them to every corner of Ireland, going to unexpected places and meeting new people. Gemma Tipton, through Festival & Van, realised just because things looked a certain way before the pandemic doesn't mean they have to look that way anymore. They bring music to the people in their van. Right now, Ukrainian and Irish musicians are touring nationwide on a shared music tour linking refugee communities and joining up all genres of music. This was very generously supported by Creative Ireland. As conductors, it's our duty to bring one love and passion across to our audiences, breaking down barriers, stereotypes and thinking outside the concert hall. Check out festivalinavan.com and my social media for more information. Well, that's it for another week and another great episode of And Other Duties, the Life of the Assistant Conductor. Don't forget to join us next week for another incredible story. And as always, if you've any questions, queries, or you're enjoying it, please let both of us know. You can find us both on social media. And a huge thank you again to IT Passion for supporting this series of And Other Duties. Join us next week to find out more.